close the wall up with our English dead, and you're still really, really quiet over there.
Well, it's one of those things that I do from time to time is be really, really quiet.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, let's do it. We'll do it again?
If you wish.
Okay. Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead. And that's the entire episode today. We're just going to repeat that.
Over and over again. We'll be great.
Once more. No, not really.
Now you've got me all thrown off.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Right.
So I got that right?
I keep expecting you, when you start in a radio voice like that, to say something along the lines of Little Orphan Annie or Who Was That Masked Man?
During which you will hear Jake say,
No, I'm not really sure what to say here.
And Jeff will say, you may have a point there.
Right.
And meanwhile, you, fair listener, or unfair listener, as the case may be, if this is Saturday, February 20th in the year of our Lord 2016, which is politically incorrect to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Actually, I could say BCE. No, it's not BCE, it's CE.
Yeah, CE. If it were BCE, we would have a little bit of problem with the equipment.
Well, we could be using rocks. And, right. They had strings.
Just clack them together and yell into a rock attached to a string.
Right.
Right.
Or an amphorae or something like that.
Yeah.
Amphora or amphoros or whatever it is. Anyway, if today is February 20th and it is Saturday where you are, then there's a very high probability that if you were to call 773-1400, you would be able to join with us on the Redidio program we're doing.
If you're not local, you can still reach that number at 254-773-1400.
Yeah, we used to have an 866 number, but it's not.
It's disappeared.
It's apparently somebody didn't pay the phone bill or something. Anyway, and this is KTEM, and you probably already knew that, and this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is, not coincidentally, also the name of a registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, a fee-only type one that happens to be registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which, of course, is no implication that they've approved or disapproved anything we do or don't do, as the case may be.
Wow. That was a lot of words.
Well, it's following on behind the ask a lawyer, you know, sort of thing. As the case may be.
You quite often say, not coincidentally, when talking about that there's a firm that we are also
members of. Well, it could just
be
a coincidence that they both have the same name, but they don't.
I think by definition, it is a coincidence. It was just intentionally coincidental.
I think the relationship is more causal than coincidental.
Well, there are two incidents that happen at the same time.
Well, they don't incidents. Actually, this is the point, they don't actually happen at the same time.
Well, we are members of both things at the same time. We're right, this program and we're...
But we're either on the program here in Temple or we're in our offices in Salado doing what we do in Salado, but we never do both of them simultaneously.
Except that we do, because that's that's what I'm saying. And ladies and gentlemen,
boys and girls,
you are now listening to the inner workings of the minds of economists.
Geeks.
All we do is talk about obvious things as if they're great, great and meaningful pieces of wisdom. But for some reason, when we talk about the economy, we talk about obvious things in the economy. People go, oh, I never thought of that before. When we speak about it in other areas, they go, well, that's not really a good area of conversation.
Actually, we're with a tremendous advantage in that we have four hands. As well as four arms.
Right. We each have four arms.
Yes. Which makes eight arms.
No, I don't think you can. The spelling is different. You can't add them that way.
Well, I mean, two arms. The British are coming.
We have four heads.
Yes. We do?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, actually, you have a forehead, and I have forehead.
Between us, we have four heads.
And four arms.
Yeah.
We could be like Hindu gods or something like that.
I'm I'm not volunteering that.
Okay.
That position.
Anyway,
what's happened this week?
We had an extremely unusual week. As a matter of fact, we broke all previous records. Guinness Book of World Records should cite this last week.
Right. It's the first week.
It is the highest growth week in the market.
I've got a better record, one that should precede any other records that we're talking about, and that record is that this is the first week in the year 2016 that started on February 14th.
Well, February 14th is a very special day.
Right. Well, it is, and it's the first week of the year that's ever started on that date. So, in saying that, I think Guinness has a lot of records that they're not even recording. These are important things, and if we're going to be talking the way that the headlines talk, let's start with records, because generally speaking, this is a record week. This is the first time in the last 3 weeks that the Dow Jones Industrial Average has done something.
This is the first week in 2016 during which the Dow Jones Industrial Average, Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, and whatever else you want to say.
NASDAQs, yes.
Yeah, and whatever. Rose.
For the whole week.
Yes, right. This is an interesting thing. It we should probably have an exception here.
An exception to what?
Because it was only a four-day week.
Oh, you're right.
So I don't know if it qualifies as a full week.
Someone came along
and
cut off a day.
Yes, Monday was
some big was scissors
voted out.
In the calendar
mm-hmm.
said
Congress.
Presidents need this day, and therefore you have one day less, except we still had the same number of days in the week.
No, we only had 4 days in this week because we had a long weekend, and that was a weekend as opposed to a weekday. There's weekdays and there's weekends.
Right.
And so
this week, a weekday became a weekend.
Right. So what happened this shortened week in the 4 days that we had available to us is the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index actually rose 2.9%, or as the newspapers – that's probably not a good term. As the news media that I read.
Right. The electronic medium.
Digitalized,
news.
Right. Said S&P 500 rises 3% for week. Sets record.
Well, yeah, you can say it sets record on any day. It just depends on what record
you're
talking
about. And then on the next
line
it says for 2016.
Right. Well, you could say set record for the day it happened to. This is the first time today.
I like the other one better, which is saying if we start on Wednesday of the previous week, it rose 6%.
I heard an anecdote from about a child this week, and I think the child should write headlines, because he said to a lady whose car he was in, who he'd never been in this car before, "This is my favorite trip in this car I've ever had." So if he were talking about records, then he would be writing up good records. The first time, and the best time, and the shortest time, and the longest time, all records for the first time in the car.
Got it.
Right. And for some reason, when it comes to the stock market, we like to hear things that could be written by a six-year-old.
Well, you know, I think that's who they're written to.
And if you think about what we do for a living...
It we means, do something for a living?
It means that we could be replaced at any moment by six-year-olds.
I think in many cases we have been replaced by six-year-olds. Anyway, what happened was, this week, for the first time in 2016, for a calendar week, albeit a shortened calendar week, the major stock indexes rose rather than fell, which is significant. All by itself, it doesn't mean a lot, but in light of the fact that last Wednesday, when I kind of sort of thought we had maybe hit a bottom, the market started up in the middle of the day, and I mentioned this in the newsletter last week, not this week. It was a day that when I went through the digital media, I could find not a whiff, not a sign, not an indication of any kind of good news, which generally indicates a market bottom. That means you're entering into a bull market when you can only find bad news. And from there, the market started up. Now, the bears, I'm going to be in interest of balance and complete disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
The bears, and I was informed by the program Grammarly that bears in this circumstance should be with a capital B.
Oh.
I was really surprised at that, but apparently it's correct. The bears are saying this is a bear market rally and that we will have a recession and
a
collapse.
How the bears like to talk about a dead cat mounts as if the bears helped make that happen. That's another thing that they call this sort of rally. Mm-hmm, it's a dead cat bounce. It's never gonna fly.
Like, right.
Okay. Who came up with that analogy?
I don't know.
What is wrong with their brain?
I don't know, but I've never experimented with dropping dead cats.
I haven't either. And the fact that somebody can count how many times a dead cat will bounce to figure out whether that's just really sick stuff.
I've really thought about this a lot, and I don't think they bounce at all.
I'm not willing to do the experiment.
Neither am I. But I just can't. It's one of those things I've thought about a lot, but it doesn't seem to make any sense. Like most everything else
right.
in the market.
It's the market we're talking about. Why does it have to make sense?
Yeah. So what we've got, not only did stock prices rise, but we saw the price of oil, which in the middle of the week was down around West Texas Intermediate oil was down around $27 a barrel, and it rose. I mean, it was about $31, $32 a barrel, and then it fell to $27. Now that doesn't sound like very much, but we've kind of followed this and major
That's
market
a 10%
declines this
drop.
Year. Major market declines this year. Whenever oil drops 10%, the market drops some, and they've been in lockstep this week. We saw a reversal of that. That's a big sign. Another thing, and it's one of those little minor things, and this is where us as economists, is it we or us?
We.
We. We. We're tiny economists.
Right.
We economists.
Or a Nintendo Play game station,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah. Find little bits and pieces of this, that, and the other that aren't reported till after the market has done whatever it's done, but tend to support there being a reason for it, which is goofy. The price of iron ore and tungsten rose this week. Now, that doesn't, you go, well,
what does that have to
me,
do with
what
the
has
price
that got
of
to do?
Rusty yeah. razor blades in Yugoslavia, or the former Yugoslavia, for that matter?
The price of iron ore and tungsten, which goes with iron ore to make steel, are pretty good indicators of where the economy is going. And you really have to watch them for a long period of time to understand what they mean. But if they rise, that means that more companies that are buying, because we really didn't have a huge expansion in iron ore producing mines like we did with most of the other minerals. And so when we see a rise in iron ore prices, it's not because there's a limitation on supply. It's because there was an increase in demand.
There's more steel being used. More steel
ordered. They're planning to make more steel down the road somewhere.
Right.
And that's a pretty good indicator across the board that something positive is happening. There's, of course, there's some other things, too, and you're probably familiar with those.
Which other things? The housing starts being up, manufacturing being up, unemployment
being down,
new job
housing starts were
up.
Down for January.
Right. Well, if you look at the revision for the month before, though, they're still, on average, up.
Well, there's a really good reason they were down in January. It's
because there was a blizzard. A big one, yes. So, I mean, looking at leading economic indicators, when we look ahead, and we say, what are the things that in the past have foretold a recession? Because that's really the reason why people are scared. They're saying, okay, the market's down. That must mean something. A lot of people are saying price of oil going down means recession. Well, generally speaking, price of oil goes down after the recession's been going for a bit because people are using less oil, not because there's more oil around. So in this case, price of oil being down is a boost to the economy, not the other way around. So what else is there out there that might be an indicator of a downturn in the economy, looking at leading indicators? The only one that I have been able to find is the stock market being down. So there are a lot of other leading indicators. All of the other leading indicators are saying the economy is doing better. and that we should expect moderate growth going forward. Those are famous words that are very boring. They're not sensational enough to get rid of the fear that people have. You know, if somebody says, the market's falling, oh no, and I say, expect moderate growth.
Well, I was just looking at
it's not very calming.
At some records on this. And the recessions we've had since World War II have all, without exception, been preceded by an increase in jobless claims.
Yep, that's not happening. We're having the reverse.
And what we've had now is 14 quarters of decreases in jobless claims with no increases. In other words, what we've not seen is people being laid off. What we are seeing is more people being hired, and very, very, very significantly, most of that hiring is going on in the small business market, not in the major corporations. Now,
and not in the government.
Right. And this is a very important factor. And the reason it's important is because the small businesses react much more quickly to economic change than do large businesses. Small businesses also tend to be domestic, whereas large businesses, major corporations, tend to be international, global. So what we saw in this last week is some analysis coming out from the jobs report that small businesses are hiring, and most of the hiring that went on, and by the way, the hiring was net down a little bit in January. The fact that it was positive was tremendous, but it wasn't like 292,000, it was 151,000. But this is the key. The hiring, the majority of the hiring in that business report was from small businesses, which indicates that small business people, by the way, tend to be far more conservative than the bigger ones.
Yeah, they don't hire people when they don't think they can hang on to the people that they're hiring.
And they are hiring. And this confirms what I'm hearing from our clients who are business leaders. And it also confirms all the other data out there. The only negative that I could find.
I've seen some negatives too. I can bring those up in a bit.
Well, the one big negative that I could find that was an indicator is the chartists. The people who chart the market and who do technical charting, and they say you can have, if you've got a head and shoulders, or you've got a declining inverse pyramid, or a triple double inverted W or whatever.
Right.
They're pretty much of a consensus we're headed into a bear market. But today I read in Barron's a quote from an unnamed source who chose to remain unnamed because he's a major chartist and apparently has quite a reputation, but he chose to remain unnamed. But I'm trusting the Barron's columnist who wrote it down, said that, I love this, this is a unique situation. Now, let me translate that into English.
By technical speakers, that means, I don't know what this means.
No, it means it's different this time.
Right.
Which means he's wrong, because there are two, when it comes to forecasting what's going on in the economy and what's going on in the markets, the kiss of death
is it's different this time.
It's different this time. There's two things that you have to, if you hear them, you realize a trend is about to reverse. One of them is, this could go on forever. The other one is, it's different this time. Both of which are consistently wrong, because it's not different this time. The markets aren't different. The world isn't different. It's just the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, what we're talking about there is human action. And when people are talking about possibly a bear market, I have no way of knowing. You have no way of knowing. The market could go down further. There are still companies in the stock market that are overpriced. I mean, an example of that would be Amazon. I think they have a 490-something price-to-earnings ratio. That's probably overpriced. I mean, at some point, they may stop spending all their earnings and actually take it as profit. That's not the way they're going now. They have a very small profit and a very high value of their stock. We don't recommend individual stocks, but I can look around and see a lot more stocks that are really, really, really undervalued, that their price-to-earnings ratio is 5, and these are major companies. That concept is the majority of the market is undervalued right now. The price-to-earnings ratio forward-looking on the S&P 500 is around 13. What does that mean? Well, the long-term forward-looking earnings average is between 15 and 17. What that means is that we're well below where we should be just as an average. We're on the bottom end of the average, not the upper end of the average. What does that mean for the market? Well, the market doesn't move short-term on any long-term averages. The market doesn't say we're overly sold, so we can't sell anymore. We might be at a bottom. It might go into a bear market. What we can tell you, and we can say this over and over again, is the underlying economy looks great. The companies that are being sold, by and large, the vast majority of them are in great shape. And that means that people are selling not because their investment is bad, but because they're afraid. That can cause a bear market. There's no real way to predict when people in mass are going to be afraid. We can look around and saying it's happening right now, but why is it happening? And I hear people talk about this regularly. I think this comes into three big categories. You've got China, you've got the price of oil, and you've got the political situation.
There's another one.
Which one is that?
Europe.
Europe. Oh, well, yeah, Europe. But Europe's really not been in the headlines much lately. So it's there, but it's not something that's causing, you know, people attributing market movements to Europe.
Whatever I think about Europe, I get depressed.
Right. I get depressed thinking about it. That's a long term. That's what we're thinking about. I don't think that's what is causing the concept of a low market.
It's clear. It's Greece's impending implosion.
Right. They're not even talking about that at the moment. Wait, that was what they were talking about a few years ago. Wait.
But it's no further from imploding today than it was then.
Right. And instead of Greece, replace that with China's economy, you know, big bold quotes at the beginning of every headline. China economy slowing down. Economy of China collapsing. What they mean by that, I have no idea because the headlines are just absolutely false there. The Chinese economy is growing at a slower rate than it was before. But the definition of growth means that you're going faster than you were the year before. So the growth rate is slowed down, but the economy is speeding up. So if you're going from 0 to 40 in a car and you're driving quickly and you let up on the accelerator, but you still want to get to 60, you haven't slowed down, and if you tell that to a police officer, they're still going to write you the ticket. It isn't slowing down to stop speeding up as fast, and that's what's going on in China. So the headlines there, which cause a lot of fear, collapse in the Chinese economy, slow down in the Chinese economy, both of those are wrong, and I've seen those headlines enough times that I can look around and say, I don't know where they got their right to write for journalists academy or whatever, that silliness. I guess it sells newspapers or web pages now?
It sells hits.
Okay, so then the price of oil. Anytime a big commodity drops in price, it doesn't matter why the price drop happens. Anytime it happens, the market reacts out of fear immediately. Wait, how are those people going to sell? How are the other people that are selling to them going to react to this? How about people that have given them loans? Who's not going to get paid back? All these questions pop up. There's a lot of unknowns. Well, in this case, all of those unknowns are not unknown. We know them. We understand them. The people that have been manufacturing pipes and rigs for the oil companies are being impacted. People that gave loans to them, people that gave loans to the companies that were pumping the oil. That's a known quantity. It's a very measured area. And as a percentage of the economy, it's tiny. This is not a repeat of 2007 with the housing market. Oil is not something that is a massive driver in our economy. It does push us forward a bit. And the fact that there is still profitable oil production happening in the United States is something people aren't recognizing.
Yeah, but you need to include the negatives in here, okay?
Okay.
Let's voluntary job quitting hits highest level in 9 years.
That's a positive.
No. Just think about it. It's a negative if somebody quits their job.
Right, except that for the economy, the fact that someone voluntarily quits means that they have another job in mind already.
Oh, come on now. Let's play this to the negative, remember?
Voluntarily job quitting's... fall to
folks,
almost nothing at the bottom of a recession.
I'm going to have a lot of fun here. I'm going to play political.
Oh yes. Demagogue is coming out. Here, go ahead.
Are you aware that in the month of January, according to the Labor Department, 3.1 million Americans quit their jobs?
Oh, that sounds horrible.
This is terrible. It's because of the beep.
Right. Fill in the blank
there.
You can, whatever your political statement of the moment.
By the way,
in economic speech, what we hear when a politician says that, when we clap, the economy's in good shape, because you don't quit your job unless you think you can get another one.
A sudden fall off in job quits is an indication we're approaching a recession.
Everybody's afraid because they don't want to quit. They will take nasty orders from the boss because they don't have another job lined up.
Let me give you a worse.
Oh,
okay.
Worse news. Okay, please go ahead.
Nearly 3.1 million people. quit their jobs in January, at the highest level since December 2006. Hires, meanwhile, increased to nearly 5.4 million workers.
Okay, so 3.1 million people quit.
And 5.4 million workers were hired. It's clearly a negative indication.
I'm not seeing the negatives.
Well, where did all those people come from?
Well,
obviously, it's the government.
I think they came from their parents.
It's obviously the government faking the numbers, because if only 3.1 million quit, how could 5.4 million be hired?
Good question.
And this is serious business.
Right.
Here.
This is the sort of thing when we hear the politicians speaking, or we look at the headlines, the misrepresentation of the meaning of the economic numbers is something that we laugh about it in the office. This is the sort of thing that people get all upset. Look at all these people that quit their jobs. Oh, it's horrible. But when I ask people individually, I ask them, what would make you quit your job? And they say, well, if I really, really disliked what I was doing, well, would you quit your job if you were terrified that next month you weren't going to be able to make your mortgage payment? And they say, no, I'd probably have another job lined up before I did that.
Well, let me tell you the next scare news.
And that what I'm saying is that when you think about yourself in the position of these numbers, they make a lot more sense than just quoting the numbers. It's really hard to think personally of 3.1 million people. That's a lot of people. But if you say one of those people, the vast majority of those people are going to make the same decisions about their job than any other rational person is, which is, if I need to meet my bill payments and I quit my job, it's because I have another job that I know I can get, or at least I know I'm competitive for.
Let me tell you something else that happened.
Okay. Bad news again?
Yes, bad news
again.
All
right. Good stuff.
There's a severe labor shortage in the United States.
Oh, no.
There are more job openings being created than there are people being hired, and have been for the last 3 months.
Oh, no. Do you know what that means?
That means that there's a severe labor shortage in the United States, and that it's bad.
Oh, no. It means that people are going to have to start getting paid more to do the same job.
That means we'll have inflation.
Only if they're not increasing productivity at the same time.
Well, can you prove that they're going to increase productivity? Because there's obviously more job openings than there are people to fill them.
I can prove it over a long term that, yes, they're going to increase productivity because I see the technology that's coming out to improve productivity.
Well, you never can tell about these things, so obviously the market should go down.
Because the cost of labor is going up, so obviously people are being hired to do things that are unnecessary. So their productivity is going down. We're going to pay you more to do nothing. That's not what's happening.
Yes, but do you realize how much the price of gasoline has dropped?
Oh, my goodness. Do you realize that the number of miles driven has gone way up while the price of gasoline has dropped? How's that for strange? People are driving more when it's cheaper?
For whatever it's worth.
More business being done?
To go back to a little more serious note, is there an interesting number also that came out about oil? the use of oil in the world, the demand for oil over the last 12 months has risen pretty significantly.
Yes.
And as the price fell. And the reason, by the way, that is given again and again and again by people who are saying bear market, the economy is turning down, that the price of oil falling is an indication of a decreased demand. Well, now that we have the numbers in, we realize that the price of oil has fallen while demand has been rising. And you know, we suspected that all along, but now we got the numbers in.
Right.
And we probably ought to do some commercials because KTEM is a commercial radio station, and Town Square Media would probably like to make some money. Maybe if they make enough money, they can actually give us back the toll-free number.
That would be nice.
But anyway, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here. Telephone number in here is 254-773-1400. And we'll be back after these important words from KTEM and Town Square's sponsors. And even though there's a 20% probability it isn't so, we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number in here, 254-773-1400.
Or that's it.
Actually, there's a second number they could call. 254-773-1468.
Ah, well, I think the 1400 will move to that one.
Yes, it does. So. But, it's easier if you say two numbers.
All right. Well, I have a subject that I wanted to talk about this week.
You do?
Yes. That's the Apple encryption fiasco deal that's going on between the FBI and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read and watched and heard much really ignorant statements about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it in a more understandable format.
Oh, will it be okay. Succinct?
I don't know how succinct it will be, but it will be more understandable.
Okay.
What's happened here is that the massacre in California, the two people that declared themselves for the Islamic State, one of them had an iPhone that they were using. It's a new iPhone. It's encrypted. The FBI is not able to see what was being done on that phone, even though they have a court order from a judge that says they want to look in the phone. They can't open the phone. They can't figure out how to get in it. So they went to the court again and requested that Apple be required to open just this phone for them and give them the ability to get in this phone.
But not just in the phone, to decrypt the data.
Right, to decrypt.
De-encrypt the data.
De-encrypt the data on that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And the FBI is saying this is a one-time deal. You do it once, it's a no problem. We're only doing it on this phone. Okay.
And we have a warrant.
And we have a warrant. And the judge said, Apple, you need to do this. And Tim Cook came out and said,
No,
we're not going to do that. The reason is because neither the FBI or the judge understand actually what they're asking for, because it's not possible for them to de-encrypt only one phone without de-encrypting all phones. It is very much like if you own a gun safe. So I'm going to make this a Second Amendment issue instead of a First Amendment issue. If you own a gun safe and the FBI goes to the gun safe manufacturer and says, I want to know who owns all the gun safes. Well, they already do that with the iPhones. Okay, I want to know who owns them all. Second, I want a key that will allow me to open everybody's gun safes. And I want you to put a GPS tracker in all the gun safes so they know where all of the gun safes are. I think that there might be a little resistance to that. I think that a lot of people might say that's probably beyond the purview of the government. And if the FBI or the ATF responded by saying, but we only want to get into one safe, we would say that doesn't make any sense. You're asking for a master key to all safes. When we're talking about encryption, each encrypted device has unique keys, just like a safe. Nobody keeps a copy of that key at a gun safe manufacturing facility. There are locksmiths that can be hired to come and crack a safe. They can be hired by the government to come and open the safe. In the case of encryption, that's not possible. You can't have a locksmith that's able to crack the safe without cracking all the safes when it comes to encryption. Because the way the keys are developed are unique. The format that they're used is not. What the FBI is asking for is a program that will overwrite the existing operating system to remove the encryption. And for one thing, that's technically not possible without knowing what the encryption was to begin with. It's not like the only thing encrypted is the operating system. Everything that's in the phone individually is encrypted as well. So I realize that's complex. I realize that there's...
And this is going to be simple, too.
I realize that there's math involved there, but so is there math involved in a locksmith situation. If we know that a single locksmith cannot go and crack a single vault because the key is so good, and the FBI instead goes to the manufacturer and says, I want a master key, but we're only going to use it for this safe. Well, we get to keep it, but we're only going to use it here.
Aren't they just asking for the information?
What information?
That's in the phone, not the key to crack the phone. But the fact is, of course,
Apple
doesn't have a key. And
right.
If they could create a key to crack that phone,
so could everybody
then
else.
Apple could create a key to crack all phones.
Right. Not just Apple, because Apple is not the one that would be doing all the cracking. The government would have access to the software that was used on the phone to crack it. So they could just take an image of that phone and use the operating system and overlay every other phone. Mm. The phone is in their possession. In order to crack it, you have to give the tools to crack it. And while we're looking at security, I think most people listening to us would recognize that they're not going to give up the right to lock their guns away because somebody might use guns in an inappropriate way. The same should be true, and this, you know, I'm going to go back to a constitutional issue. The Founding Fathers, when they wrote the Constitution, had some pretty clear things to say about the post office. That political speech needed to be protected by the government, and the only people that could protect it from the government's eyes was the government. So the only way a piece of mail could be opened was under a search warrant. And the people that were controlling that were the government. Now, we trusted the post office. We still trust the post office to do that. It's a major crime for people to open the mail that doesn't belong to them. It's an even more major crime for the government to do it without a warrant. I think we need to apply the same sorts of situations to the new technology as the old. We have to recognize that privacy is as important as any other right that we have. Privacy from illegal search and seizure is pretty important stuff. And if the government in the past has shown the ability to look into warrantless wiretapping and warrantless looking into phones, and the people of the United States are willing to pay for encryption to keep the government from doing that, the government can't turn around and say, well, you're not allowed to encrypt. Okay, we want to see it.
Tim Cook's statement on that clarifies it to me, which is, the United States government has asked us for something we simply do not have.
Right. They would have to
write
it.
We consider too dangerous to create. They've asked us to build a back door into the iPhone.
Yeah. And it isn't something that can just be done as a one-off deal. They have to write into the existing software, not just a new piece of software. That's something that the judge says, all you have to do is write a new piece. No, they have to change the entire operating system, so that the encryption has the ability to be opened.
See, I didn't understand that. I'm reading an article here in the Washington Post. It says, the court order does not ask Apple to break the phone's encryption, but rather to disable the feature that wipes the data on the phone after 10 incorrect tries at entering a password.
Right.
In other words,
so that they can hook it up to a computer
and try
lots of passwords, which is, you know, if they can do it, so can anybody else.
But it's pretty clearly going to go to the Supreme Court. And the problem
is we have an even vote in the
Supreme Court right now.
And
the point is that it's almost certain, if you look at the people who are sitting on the Supreme Court right now with Justice Scalia gone, it'll be divided. Now, I'd have to look up and see if, let's say, a lower court says crack the phone.
And let me say something out here for the people that are big fans of Scalia. The one area that he voted quite consistently in favor of, besides anti-abortion, was pro-free speech, pro-privacy from government intervention. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. And Donald Trump just came out in a speech and said that everybody should boycott Apple because Apple's refusing to give information on a phone that's owned by the government. Donald Trump has just shown that he, like most people, don't understand what encryption is. Most people don't understand how locks on doors work. But if the government had a master key to everybody's house, we would be looking at this differently. Now, they may have the ability to ram a door open, but we don't give them the key. Anyway.
We have a caller on 773-1400. And caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Enjoy your show. Couple of articles in the Wall Street Journal about England thinking about leaving the EU.
Okay, there's a name for that.
The Brexit.
Have you guys talked about that?
No, we've talked about it in the past, but not this time. It's the Brexit.
Okay.
It's like the Grexit, only this is the Brexit.
Because we can't come up with new terms. We just have to revise old terms to...
Okay.
Well, we have to have shorter... We wouldn't be economic... Yeah.
How's it gonna impact? Is this
the
first crack in the EU?
No, certainly not the first crack.
It is a crack. It is not the first crack.
Okay, we'll talk about it.
In June, they're going to have a referendum there. But this is only after David Cameron, who's the one that set up the referendum, the Prime Minister of Great Britain.
Who got elected based on the fact that he would hold a referendum.
Right. He just got back from Brussels, as in today, where he's negotiated better terms for the Great Britain's involvement in the European Union. So they want Great Britain to stay. They have the ability to do things that other countries in the European Union are not allowed to do. For instance, they're allowed to say no more migrants into Great Britain.
They've also been allowed
to say that all along, but they've got more right to say it now.
They also have the ability to not contribute to other people's expenses for unconstrained migration into Europe.
Right. So if after those things have been established, the British people still decide to leave...
To Brexit.
To the Britain leaving the European Union, the Britain exit, which sounds to me like what the tabloids did with Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie.
What was that?
Some kind of combination of their names, like Brangelina or... Silliness. It's like we are now in the economist world in the tabloids.
Well, this is
so the Brexit. What if the referendum says still that they will leave the European Union? It's not going to be good for either economy.
The
long term implication of that is they're back to having no longer free trade agreement that has to be redone with the rest of Europe. And so on. There's a lot of other things that have to happen.
There's a certain degree of irony here, but there's also a certain degree of reality. Greece's exit, the Grexit.
Which didn't actually happen.
Right.
It was just feared to have happened.
Was because Greece was in such terrible economic condition. The Brexit would occur because the British are economically better off than
the rest
pretty
of
much
Europe.
Anybody else in Europe right now. And they are tired. They don't want to have to support other members of the European Union. Now, factually, this is going on all over the world. I mean, the first indication of such things was going on was when Governor Perry suggested that Texas could always secede.
Right.
Which they couldn't. We can't. But that's sort of beside the point.
Britain can.
Britain can. Britain can leave the European Union. It gets like the Confederacy that existed before the Constitution.
Yeah, not the Confederacy of States, but the Confederacy.
Well,
it wasn't the Confederacy of the Civil War.
No,
it was a different Confederacy.
In a sense, and this is an important thing I think most people don't understand, what the Southern states did that precipitated the Civil War was attempt to reject the Constitution and reestablish the Articles of Confederacy.
Correct.
saying that, yeah, I know, we voted for the Constitution, but there's nothing specifically in the Constitution that says we can't leave.
Yeah, we can't unvote. Yeah, there's nothing in there that says we can't unvote our way out.
So they just did. And there's certainly a significant number of people in the United States who would like to see, I have actually heard some talk to me, who would really like to see the United States return to a confederation of states where a state could do whatever it wanted to do and could and would leave whenever it wanted to leave. Fact is that that would cause an economic collapse of pretty earth-shaking
yeah. Because Texas levels. Would then, if Texas seceded, we would have to come up with import-export laws with the rest of the United
States.
And
our own currency and our own defense, and
right.
We would pretty quickly go broke. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We'll talk maybe a little more about the about what's going on that it is causing this move towards the Brexit. But if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a local telephone number with voicemail over the weekend and live human beings that answer the phone during the week, and that's at 947-1111.
You can reach that toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, and we actually use these emails on our program. People give us ideas at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can listen to podcasts. You can read about our philosophy and the newsletters that we put out every week.
You can see our made-for-radio faces.
Yes. I'm sorry about that, but our pictures are up there. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.